Grammy-winning composer and conductor Eric Whitaker is one of the most popular musicians of our time. His concert music has been performed throughout the world by millions of amateur and professional musicians alike, whilst his groundbreaking virtual choirs have united thousands of singers from over 110 different countries. A graduate of the prestigious Juilliard School of Music in New York, Eric was recently appointed artist in residence with the Los Angeles Master Chorale, having completed a 5-year term as composer in residence at Sydney Sussex College, part of Cambridge University. Eric Whitaker is currently in the UK, doing a number of concerts and recordings across the country with different choirs and orchestras, including the BBC Singers. Through our good friend and X10 radio presenter, Johnny Manners, who is now a BBC Radio 3 producer, we've been very fortunate to get an interview with Eric Whitaker prior to his sold-out concert visit on Tuesday, the 11th of July in Taunton. Earlier this week, I went to meet him. Eric Whitaker, thank you for allowing me to catch you between rehearsals at the BBC Maida Vale Studios in London. It's a delight and pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Prior to your visit next Tuesday, the 11th of July, with the BBC Singers in concert at Taunton St Mary Magdalene Church, may I ask you a few, hopefully not too searching questions?
Please.
So let's go right back, if we may. You were born in Nevada. I kind of imagine, I've not been there, but I imagine it's wide open spaces, perhaps. That's something that's incorporated in your music, because your childhood was kind of very broad and wonderful openness and so on.
It was. Big skies, lots and lots of open ground to play in. I didn't know it until actually Stephen Layton, the conductor, British conductor of Polyphony, pointed it out to me. You know, he said that my music is full of these wide open spaces, this big air, and that it must be like Nevada, and I realized, oh, yes, I guess it is. Got into me.
What's your sort of first memory of music? Was it kind of family played, or was it an instrument you heard, or what influenced your path toward also become, you know, arguably a world-changing career?
Well, growing up, I had no real formal training. No one in my family was a musician or even played music. My grandmother used to play records, and every year would take us to hear Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite in Reno, Nevada, which was the big city at the time. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I discovered pop music. So I wrote pop songs and played synthesizers and drum machines. And it wasn't until I was 18 years old and I joined the choir at university that my life was truly changed.
Right. I gather that a strong influence at an early age was Mozart's Requiem.
It's the influence. I went into rehearsal not knowing what I was doing, hoping to meet girls, and I left.
You were singing?
I was singing. I was singing as a bass, but I'd never sung in a choir before. I didn't read music at the time, and we spent 50 minutes singing through the Kyrie, the Requiem by Mozart, and that was it. My life was transformed. I came out of that rehearsal the world's biggest choir nerd.
How wonderful. So it was just one of those sort of events that change your life.
Truly.
Yeah. How wonderful. How wonderful. For some time, you were composer in residence at Sydney Sussex College in Cambridge. Did you enjoy your time there?
I loved it. I loved working with David Skinner, a colleague and a terrific conductor. He's got a beautiful choir there. The chapel at Sydney Sussex is one of the older ones, but it's very warm and intimate. And yes, some of my fondest memories are actually singing Evensong with the choir sitting in as a bass, singing with them and then spending time with them afterwards.
And so did your stay actually there create any sort of influences on you during that time? What sort of things were you writing?
I did. I didn't really realize it until I moved back to Los Angeles a couple of years ago, but then I realized, wow, it really seeped in. While I was there, I wrote an Alleluia. I wrote a piece called Sainte-Chapelle, which is a tribute to Sainte-Chapelle in Paris.
We're going to hear that next week, aren't
That's
we?
Exactly right. Yeah. And that piece was heavily influenced by the Taliesin bird that we were singing, you know, during Evensong. I wrote a piece called The River Cam for cello and strings that was obviously inspired by the river that runs right there through Cambridge. And in my mind, actually inspired by Vaughan Williams as a student walking through Cambridge along those banks. So the influence was powerful.
Brilliant. Your musical style, I'd been pondering how I'm going to ask you this question. Wiki has an excellent piece in its biography with a lot of words that a mere mortal like me needs to look up. But tell us in your own words how you would describe your own compositions and sort of what inspires you to get to work on them.
Oof. You know, I'm so close to it, it's difficult for me to talk about my style. I suppose, first and foremost to me, music is communication. And so what I want to do more than anything is to connect with the singers and with the audience as I'm writing, that every note is designed to be absorbed and shared in a way. I'd like to think that I'm not pandering at all, but actually it's just a framework for a communal experience. That's what I'm trying to do with each note and each phrase that I write. I suppose, to me, that each style changes depending on the text that I'm writing. And the way I think about it is that I'm illuminating, almost like with gold, but this way with music, the poetry that I've chosen. So if I'm setting an alleluia, for instance, there's a certain music that's elicited from that word, from that intention, as opposed to, say, Sainte-Chapelle, which is maybe more mysterious and more mystical in its text. And so the music that comes out of that is, I think, different than the Alleluia.
It's a similar sort of question, perhaps. Some critics write that you create music with, and I quote, unearthly beauty and imagination, and an emotional directness and intensity. Now, are these fair comments, and are they something that sort of guide you in your writing?
I suppose so. I'm attracted to beautiful things. There's no question, just as a pure aesthetic. That can be food, the natural world, people, music. I just love beauty, the purity of beauty, so there's no question that everything I'm trying to write, I try to make as beautiful as possible. And then in terms of
emotional directness and intensity.
That's a huge compliment for me, because absolutely, that's what I'd like to do. And that maybe that does come from a West Coast, not just American upbringing, but a West Coast American upbringing, which is that we speak plain, we say what we mean. And so ideally, if the music requires, let's say it requires sorrow, then that's it. There's no pretense. There's no dressing up, hiding behind technique. It's simply sorrow. I don't always achieve it, but I try to find the most elegant, efficient solution to communicate that very pure emotion.
Super, super. The Eric Whitaker singers, so we're not working with them today, but who are the lucky ones, and are they from all around the globe?
No, so actually the Eric Whitaker singers are all Brits here.
Oh, really?
In London. Yes, it was formed while I was living in London 7 years ago, and we kept ever since. We just recorded even on Sunday, and we toured the States a few months ago. Yes, it's just this band of British singers that I've fallen in love with over the years, and yeah, we've made recordings together, performances. I adore all of those singers.
That's great. That's brilliant. Your first prom, it was in 2012, when you really starting to hit the big time. And you then came back to do the August 2015 prom,
yes.
At which you conducted your popular Cloudburst and another mind blower, which was the very technology-inclusive Deep Field. Was that its first performance, and has it been done since?
Deep Field.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was the very first performance was in Minneapolis, Minnesota, just 2 months earlier. It was certainly its first European performance, and by far its most epic performance. You know, the audience all uses smartphones as well.
I was there with absolutely. I was there with my sister, my daughter, my granddaughter, who studied music at Holloway
How
College.
Beautiful.
And we just were blown away. It was just fantastic.
Thank you.
It was really, really good.
And my God, 6,000 people, you know, all using their phones.
Absolutely.
It was beautiful in there.
It was an amazing experience. It really was. Completely memorable. I'll never, ever forget
Thank you.
It.
For me as well.
It was fantastic. It really was. So thank you for that. So you're working with the BBC singers today. Now, what's that like? I mean, are they a good bunch?
They're extraordinary. They're world class. I knew about them even before I'd ever come to England. Mm. You know, I had all the recordings. And, I mean, what to say about them? They're phenomenal musicians. They sight read just like nobody's business. It's very smart musicians, and also just a lovely bunch of people. You know, it doesn't always have to be that way with professional groups. And so it's just nice being with them, making music with them. I enjoy it every time I get to come back.
I read somewhere that you aspired, like so many youngsters, to become a pop star. Was your time with Depeche Mode enough to satisfy that dream?
Well, So I always put on my CV that I'm the fifth member of Depeche Mode, but Depeche Mode has not claimed me. I've never met them, so I'm really the president of their fan club. It's not.
Oh, I see.
So my time with Depeche Mode was spent mostly in my bedroom, playing their records and playing along.
So they were a group of your youth, in effect.
Exactly. Huge influence on me. I suppose still even. Yeah. And my dream is that one day I'll be at a Depeche Mode concert and suddenly the keyboard player will be sick and they'll say, does anybody happen to know every Depeche Mode song just out there? No.
It's me! Marvelous. You're quoted as saying, I'm a self-confessed geek and my whole concept of music at first was entirely electronic. Now, so we come to virtual choirs. You've been at the forefront of this new method of getting people involved with music, not just as listeners, but as performers. What started this fantastic way of utilizing modern technology?
So it started very humbly and simply. This young woman, 17 years old at the time, uploaded a fan video to me on YouTube. And she didn't know me. She was just hoping that I would see it. In it, she was singing the soprano line to a piece that I had written called Sleep. She was singing along with a CD. And I happened to see the video. And I was overcome with emotion seeing it. Her voice is so pure, still up there on YouTube. And it was just so innocent, just such a sweet gift.
Like, did she sing it solo?
She did. Well, she put on a CD. All right. So it was playing in the background. And then she just sang the soprano line over the top of it.
Brilliant.
Just as this little gift. And watching her sing, I thought, if we could somehow get 25 people to do what she was doing, soprano, alto, tenor, or bass, and just sing their parts wherever they were in the world, as long as they were singing at the same tempo, the same speed, and in the same key, if we just took their videos and literally started them all at the same time, all 25 videos, then it would have to make a choir, right? It would have to make a virtual choir. So it just began as an experiment. I wrote on social media, I said, I've got this idea, let's try this thing. We had no idea if it would work. At first, the big question was, how do we all sing at the same tempo? And so I made a conductor video that I uploaded of me conducting the piece, but with no audio because there's no choir yet. So people just followed my little conductor video, uploaded their parts. The first video, we had 185 singers from 12 different countries. It sounded like music. It was really beautiful. We uploaded it thinking that nobody but our little circle of choir geeks would be interested in this. The video went viral. And it got picked up by the international news media. Mm. And suddenly singers were writing in from all over the world. How do we be a part of the next one? Mm. I hadn't even thought about a next one. And each one has gotten bigger and bigger until finally the last one that we did a couple of years ago had 8,400 singers from 101 different countries.
Wow, that's
can you imagine?
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I never could have dreamed this would have been possible.
So it was Sleep that was done, was it?
Yeah, the first time that we tried it, we did a piece called Lux Aurora. Right, Light and Gold.
Right, which again we're going to hear on.
That's right. Yes, we'll hear at the concert
next Tuesday.
That's it. And so that was the first piece that the virtual choir performed, and then we did Sleep, another piece of mine called Water Night, which we'll also do, and then finally this past one was from a musical that I'm working on, the latest one. He's called Fly to Paradise.
I have to say, I mean, through the virtual choir that I heard about Sleep, and then I think I must have watched it on YouTube, and I was just completely blown away. And I hope you don't mind my asking, and this doesn't need to be on record, but I've said to everybody, I want that played at my funeral. It is so, so amazing.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's absolutely most wonderful, wonderful piece. Again, one of those life-changing experiences, and I thank you for that. I really do.
I'm truly humbled by that. Thank you.
Having received countless awards, this is probably an unfair question, but are there two or three of which you are particularly proud?
Awards, you mean?
Mm.
This will sound corny, but it is the absolute truth. Mm. A couple of years ago for Father's Day, my son gave me a little cup that said, World's Best Father. that's it right there. I can retire after that one.
That's lovely. So, Eric, thank you so much for taking time to chat today. But before we sign off, tell us what's on the horizon. You know, what you're working on at present and what things are, for want of a better expression, bubbling under.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So this piece, Deep Field, that you mentioned, we'll record with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra next week after these BBC concerts. I'm very excited about that. We've recorded some new choral singles that we'll be releasing very soon. And then I'm starting work now on a piece called The Sacred Veil, a major work with poetry by Charles Anthony Silvestri, the same poet who wrote Sleep. It's a big piece. I'm excited about it. And the bits that we've written together so far, I think we're finding something very special. So good.
Excellent. No, that's really good to have a bit of sort of news from what's coming up. So, if we may, just promote next Tuesday's concert. Eric Whittaker and the BBC Singers are in concert at Taunton's St Mary Magdalene's Church, and the lovely Sarah Moore Peach is going to be presenting that programme. We've mentioned already Saint-Chapelle, we've mentioned Lux Urumque. So, if we may, I'm going to play that at the end of the interview. Tell us about the piece that we're going to hear next week, which is UK premiere of I Fall. You know, when was it written and how long was it?
I Fall is the first piece from The Sacred Veil, from this large work that we're going to write. That's what it is. And this entire piece is about the poet, as I was mentioning, Charles Anthony Silvestri. He lost his wife to cancer 11 years ago, to ovarian cancer. I think he's just now ready to start writing about it. So the entire piece, Sacred Veil, will be about her life, her death, and beyond. And this moment, I Fall, Tony wrote about the moment that he lost her. And there's a refrain three times in the poem that says, "You rise, I fall." And you can hear that in the music, that there's this ephemeral, ethereal sound as she rises, and then as he falls, still living here, descending into madness. And so, yeah, this is what we will perform the other
night. It sounds very moving, and we're really, really looking forward to seeing you in Taunton, Eric. Thank you so much.
It's truly my pleasure. Thank you, Anton.
This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org.